Good evening, listeners, and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast with, guess what, Harry as your new host this week. I'm Harry Philby and joined this week by Shane Lees.
Hello.
And Andrew Clark.
Evening.
All right, we're going to start off with some news, ladies and gentlemen. So to start off with, Sol Campbell has joined Macclesfield. Now, his only previous coaching experience appears to be as assistant to Dennis Lawrence at Trinidad and Tobago. So is this a sign that the being a top player doesn't guarantee you a top job at a club like the way that Lampard and Gerrard have done, as it is literally the bottom job in the Football League?
I mean, you can look at it another way. Lampard is clearly very intelligent, very well-spoken. He's put across a lot of footballing knowledge, and Sol Campbell's a dick. So when you look at these two comparisons, one person who says almost nothing but sheer nonsense, like anybody who goes to the Ukraine will go there in body bags, merely, he was right. He was just a few years off, considering everything that's happening. You know, you've got that guy who's turning around saying these things. I don't think it's a coincidence that some of these people get better jobs than others.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. My interesting question, though, was, will he do better or worse than his attempt to be a Tory party candidate? Do you remember that, Sol Campbell? Didn't he was a Tory party candidate for somewhere, wasn't he? Yeah.
2015, I think it was. 2015, yeah. I think he was.
And it didn't work out. So how is he going to be at Macclesfield, do you reckon?
He'll be one of those managers. You look at him on Wikipedia. He has a 1 year stint, which definitely wasn't a year. It was like 4 months or something, and then never managed ever again.
I think that's quite likely as well.
A bit like Gazza, but without going insane.
Yeah. Well, they are 4 points off of their bottom at the moment, with 4 points outside to step out of the relegation zone. So it is tighter and possible for him to do a good job there. But I mean, it's a bad sign when literally nowhere else will have you other than Dennis Lawrence at Trinidad and Tobago as your assistant.
He campaigned for a while, didn't he, about black managers in football? Was it him who did it? He kept saying there wasn't enough black managers in football?
It was him and Paul Ince who kept complaining.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about it. Like, Chris Hughton's got involved with it. I think it was, there was another guy who was in the Championship the same time we were, and they were like two of the only black managers in the Football
Heath
League.
Girl might have been the other one. Carlisle for a long time.
Rossini, he was one of them.
What, Liam Rossini?
Was his dad Leroy?
Oh, it might have been. I'm trying to remember the other guy's name. I can't remember it. But yeah, I think he has been involved with that and stuff. But it's quite hard to be involved with that conversation when you're quite clearly not rated by anybody enough to get a top job or a good job in management.
Well, this is the time you can prove it now, because really the only way is up from where he's at. So if you kind of prove it now, from the start.
It literally cannot get much worse.
Yeah, that literally cannot.
Unless you're in conference, maybe. You never know.
Yeah, true. Well, Sol Campbell might be in the conference next season. That would be really fun to watch.
Well, best of luck to him.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope he does well.
Well, they've won 2 out of 2. I think they've won the last two games 1-0, so.
Have they? Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. I probably should have researched that as a host, so.
Yeah. I think Exeter will be on Tuesday, and I can't remember the other one.
In other news, we're going to highlight a game from the Championship today. It's not so much news as it is just a noteworthy game between Aston Villa and Nottingham Forest, with Villa at home. It ended 5-all with a red card in it. So Villa went 2-0 down in the opening 6 minutes with some dreadful defending. I've watched the highlights. But then Villa brought it back to 2-all, and then Forest scored again, and then Abraham finished it off with a hat-trick to make it 3-all at half-time. So 3-all at half-time with a Tammy Abraham hat-trick. Forest take the lead again quickly and start the second half with a screamer from Joe Lolley. It must be about 25 yards, absolute rocket, making it 3-4. Then have a player sent off for a diving tackle in the 68th minute. Villa score 2 in 5 minutes, one from Abraham and another from a guy whose name I've forgotten.
So El Ghazi?
El Ghazi, that's the guy. Good for remembering that. To make it 5-4 in the 75th minute, and then Forest grab a late equaliser in the 82nd. So it's 5-all at home for Aston Villa in the Championship.
Abraham also had offside goal as well to make it 6-5.
Yeah, I saw that in the extended highlights as well, which is pretty incredible. If you want to watch this game, I'd recommend it. There's an extended highlights up on YouTube, and it will really demonstrate quite how bad some of the defending is. Funnily enough, Nottingham Forest actually scored with their 5 shots on target, so some pretty dreadful goalkeeping performances. A couple of them are definitely savable. But what I wanted to highlight here, actually, is does this show that the Championship is quite obviously much more competitive than the Premier League?
Yeah, Championship is a great... Anybody who actually watches Championship games knows it's a great division for the entertainment side of things. You've got so many different kinds of teams, and it's so competitive because the space between the very top teams and the space between the very bottom teams, unless there were ridiculous relegations or promotions, is always fairly tight. And you're talking about the difference being one or two players having great years or a manager coming in who's a great manager. You really are talking about the finest of margins as to what ends up being a top team in the Championship. A bit like Derby this year, turning it around, looking quite good because a very good manager's coming in. And those bottom teams, you don't get that in any other league, because for all the other leagues, there are those teams that are consistently in the same sort of positions. I think it naturally occurs when you're in a second division, as they are when you've got the teams. Nobody can ever establish a period of dominance, because the teams that go up, obviously, you're not going to have them in there next year. And if they come tumbling straight back down, they're going to struggle just as much, because now they've suddenly got players on wages, players who want to move on. It becomes a difficult situation. And because of the English football structure is so well established for so long, those top four divisions are hugely, hugely competitive all the way through. So the League One sides, the quality of them is amazingly good. I think I said it a few weeks ago. If you to be the worst player in League Two, you have to be an unbelievable footballer. You have to be a real high quality footballer. And you can't necessarily say the same thing when you're talking about, you know, the German leagues, the Spanish leagues and all of that lot, because there is a real drop off once you get to a certain point, and it's not when you're getting into non-league levels.
Yeah, well, if you're the worst player in the League Two, you're the best player in the Scottish First Division. So that was an easy one. Come on, man. Yeah, I think it also has a lot to do with like the flip-floppy teams, the teams that normally go up and down, like your Norwiches, your Middlesbroughs, even Aston Villa, obviously dropping down, QPR, all of those lot. They've all sort of hit patches now where they've all started to sort of stick in the Championship and get stuck down there and improve a little bit. And so now there's just loads of top teams there. And now you've even got teams like Sheffield United stepping up. Forest finally look good, considering they've been average for years. Derby
if
again.
We did that rather just plummet.
Well, are you guys doing all right in League One?
Second.
That'll do, won't it?
We're coming back, don't worry.
How are Luton doing? Luton are third.
Third or fourth?
Yeah, with Nathan Jones, the English Pep Guardiola.
Important question, though. How is Lee Catamol doing?
Oh, that's great.
More than likely injured. Oh. I think he hasn't played the last couple of games, from what I remember. He's either injured or suspended, one of the two. It's usually the case with him.
That's a role reversal for him. We're used to injuring other people, so...
I love Lee Catamol. Yeah, he has always been one of my first signings on Football Manager.
He's
when I'm a crap
so
team.
Frustrating. No, the problem with him when we were in the Premier League, he wouldn't turn up all season till them last 6 to 8 games where we come up this miraculous recovery and survive with like a game to go. It's the only time he ever turned up for us. Other than that, he was garbage.
That's amazing, man. I miss Catamol. What a player. Anyway,
just quickly talking about that the Forest game. I was talking to Anth about 30 minutes ago, and on the old 606 forums with these little football leagues we used to do when we were younger, Joe Lolly was actually one of the people within our leagues.
Really?
Yes. And messages asked if I remembered the person, and he said, turns out it was actually Joe Lolly. And he said, I've worked it all out, and it actually does all tie up. It was him who we actually we used to take the mick of in the leagues when he was banned from 606 by his team.
That's amazing. That's
cool. We've had some big people on V2. I mean, we've had Tyson Fury on the boxing podcast back when that used to happen.
Oh, I never followed that, the boxing one. So.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
We're a big deal.
Can we get Joe Lolly back?
We should try and get him.
It depends how well I do as host. He might be better than me. So, that's amazing. Oh, well, good for him. And good for us, I guess. In other news, though, Man United have released the most disgusting football shirt I've ever seen in my life. It's a leopard print shirt. They describe it as leopard print. Giraffe is quite accurate, I'll give you that. It's worth having a Google and looking it up. to be fair to them, it's not actually a player's shirt. They aren't going to wear it in any matches, and they actually only made it in a collaboration with EA for the FIFA games. But then they printed 200 shirts in real life. What would you be willing to play for one of these shirts, guys, out of interest? Because this
I've just had a look at it, and I reckon about $4 didgeridollars.
Four didgeridollars.
Yes, that's
$900 issues.
Yeah, fake Australian currency is what I'd be willing to pay for this.
Well, it's £65. Right, one more last bit of news is from Jurgen Klopp today. So Jurgen Klopp came out after Liverpool's performance against PSG, which we'll talk a little bit more about later in our Champions League section, and has openly criticised the play acting by some of the PSG players, saying that it made them look like butchers. And in response to it, I've got a quote here about what he said about the game. So there are a lot of things you can do about it. You can give yellow cards for everything. If you go down, you act like you die, and then the next moment you get up, it's a yellow card. It's unsportsmanlike behaviour. That's what he said. So now, he was obviously frustrated with the game and conceded that PSG probably deserved to win the match. But is it refreshing to hear a manager talking about this rather than it usually being the pundits and the fans?
Yes, of course it is. Because as far as I'm concerned, if a player goes down and he's saying he's injured, all the ref has to do is say, all right, get off the pitch.
Yeah.
You're injured, get off the pitch. You're going to be out of this game for the next 2 or 3 minutes until we find a moment to get you back in. The players will get up a little bit more or turn around and say, right, I know you're not actually hurt there because you will get up. So either get up or I'm booking you. And if they say, no, I'm really injured, then go, all right, off the pitch you go then. So that's a really simple one. Problem is, Liverpool players dive like hell. It's like Mark Hughes the other day complaining about us going out in the League Cup, complaining about VAR. When 2 weeks ago, we were saying, we need VAR. You can't say, oh, it's we definitely need technology and everything, and going, well, technology's just not good enough, can you? It's complete hypocrisy. So as much as I admire him for saying it, and I wish they were all saying it, he's clearly saying one thing, and then to his players when they're diving around, he's sort of, well, he's probably not saying anything to him, he's just going, yeah, good penalty, boys.
No consistency? Would he say that if they won the game?
Yeah,
no, of course not. If they'd won it from a penalty where it was a dive, he'd say, oh, well, I didn't see it.
I didn't see
that one.
I agree. It is a massive, like, circle of hypocrisy.
You need the manager. Yeah. What I would love is if the managers called out their own players. Yeah. If they said, right, you're diving around and I'm not having that. If they actually went on, you know, the press conferences afterwards and just said, yeah, we've had, Sadio Mane, he's dived out there. The ref didn't catch him, so we're banning him from the next game.
Yeah.
Or we're telling him absolutely not ever again, or you do not play. That I would respect. This is whining, and yes, you want to hear them pointing it out, and you also do want to hear them making suggestions. I do think that's another thing. Clearly, VAR in the Premier League came as a consequence of a couple of decisions that were really a bit too obvious. Yeah. So you want them to do this because this is how it gets the attention of the people who are making the laws. But on the other hand, you've got to think it doesn't mean anything if you're only complaining about the opposition. It's meaningless at that point.
Yeah, and I also think there's some responsibility on the players to own up to it themselves. Like, there was a thing with James Maddison after he got sent off against Brighton for a dive. And I know I'm bringing up Brighton, but, you know, that's why I know about it. But he admitted to diving on Twitter and basically said, I was expecting contact that didn't come. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, yeah, fair play to him for apologising for it. He probably wouldn't have done it if he'd actually won the penalty, though. That's the issue, is the inconsistency and the hypocrisy from players and managers and the way it's enforced.
The problem is, like, we speak about it all the time, there's so much money in football, so something like that, if they get the penalty for it, it could keep some teams up. But yeah, to be honest, not say, oh, sorry, I dove, not get the penalty, and it costs a team in the long run. So
I've made the point a few times. I think I've actually made it on this podcast. Is the problem with diving is it's a profit loss risk calculation. Profit of diving is high. You win a penalty, you win a game, you win a league, you win a cup. It's something like the profit of diving is really high. The loss, yellow card. That's nothing. That's absolute crap. And then the risk is how likely you are to get called out for diving to get that yellow card. It's very low. More often than not, referees will just wave it away and say no foul. They won't say, no, you've clearly bloody dived there, because if you've gone flying and I'm saying there's no foul, that's either body-to-body contact, in which case I'm right to do this, which most of the time it's not, you know, shoulders to shoulders. It's not that kind of thing. Or it's a dive. So the risk is low. What you've got to do to balance it is you can't affect the reward, because if a player gets fouled in the penalty area, it's a penalty. So the reward has to stay the same. You've got to increase the risk, which means giving referees more license to go and punish those players, selling to them to stop giving those players the benefit of doubt. Start accepting that these players are en masse in pretty much every single position, from centre back to striker, diving, and say you've got to start clamping down this, and give them a harsher punishment. If it's an outright dive, red card. If it's play acting, yellow card. If it's in the happens in the game but you can't see it, ban after the game. So you review it, it's a ban, it's a free match ban. Because I tell you what, if you've got your star players, if your star players like Sterling are missing 7-8 games in a season because of this, your manager's going to say to them at some point, stop doing it. We can't afford to have you out for that many games. And do you wonder how we know this will work? Because it is the exact thing we did for two-footed tackles. Increase the risk, increase referees having the willingness to clamp down on it and make the punishment more severe. The exact same situation. And it got rid of it. It now happens in such rare occasions. And when it does happen, everyone's all up in arms and going, you shouldn't do that. That's absolutely outrageous. He was right to get sent off. So that's it. That's the only solution. It's the simplest solution. We already know it'll work. And it's just because we got some very unwilling people to change in the various places in football. And it was a bit like the World Cup. The World Cup, you know, which is going out to the world stage. Many people who are not football fans are going to see that. And they're seeing Neymar diving around, all of that lot. It looks awful. It looks awful for the game. When you hear people who don't like football say, oh, I just don't like how much they act like a bunch of pussies. You hear them say that. You say, I see rugby players getting these massive hits and they just get up. And you see football and you think, actually, no, I can see what you're talking about. If I didn't grow up liking football and I started watching football now, I'd hate football players. Honestly, I would despise.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Yeah, I think it's a lot of this stuff is going to get eased out when VAR comes in anyway, because the referees will have much more freedom to be brave with their decisions, knowing it might be corrected later on if it's wrong and things like that. And actually, I do think, talking about what you're saying, I do think a lot of credit should go to Chris Kavanagh, the referee for that game. Because actually, from where I was sitting up in the stadium, I thought it was a penalty. I thought it was a foul where I was sitting. And then the ref immediately blew his whistle, pointed the other way, yellow, second yellow. And the first yellow was a horrible, cynical tackle on the halfway line, definitely a yellow card as well. So to actually have the bravery to do that to a young up-and-coming England star in the 28th minute of a pivotal game when we're 1-0 up, I think is actually pretty brave, and he deserves a lot of credit for that anyway. So good on him. So anyway, we're going to have a look now at the Premier League results from the weekend and how they've impacted the league. So there are a lot of straightforward results, with Everton beating Cardiff 1-0 at home. Hard-earned victory, but fully deserved with a Sigurdsson goal. Pushes Everton up to sixth now, which that means they're only 6 points off fourth. But to put that into perspective, they are also 6 points off of 11th. So it shows how tight the league is between the top six and below, really. So it doesn't show that much about how they're doing the season, other than that they are literally the best of the rest. Home draw against Brighton against 10-man Leicester. Probably an expected result to get a draw from that game, but it was honestly a little bit disappointing from my point of view. Didn't play all that well, but it's had little impact on the table or our seasons in the whole. That's fine. Bournemouth losing to Arsenal, not much of a shock. City beating West Ham, not much of a shock. Liverpool beating Watford, not much of a shock. And Man United drawing at home to Palace is not much of a shock either. So, there we go. Bam.
Whoa.
Nailed that one. Right. But the big talking points, I think, that are worth it looking at. Huddersfield getting an away win at Wolves 2-0. It was mostly, I think, no disrespect to Huddersfield, down to a dreadful Wolves performance from what I've seen from that game. They just looked like a shadow of themselves as they were at the start of the season. But it's left them winless in 5 games. With 4 losses and only 1 draw against Arsenal, with Tottenham, Watford and Huddersfield at home all being losses and Arsenal and Brighton away losing. Now, I will say they probably deserve to get something out of the Brighton game, but is there a case to say that the wheels are maybe coming off of Santos' sleigh? Eh? Get it? Eh?
Wow, that's awful.
Little Christmas scene? Oh, that was good.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's either wheels are coming off, because you've got to be relative here. They've still got twice as many points as Southampton in, you know, the top relegation spot, so it's not like it's a total disaster. They're still 8 points clear of relegation, but at the same time, if you think let's just sort of roughly average out this form over the whole course of a season, they're going to finish just outside of the relegation spaces, maybe up to around 15th, 14th, which is about right where they should be. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a case that the wheels have come off. If this form keeps going for another 4 or 5 games, yeah, they're in real trouble. But if it's a case of they get a win here, you know, a real scraped one, couple of draws, suddenly they're climbing right back up the table. And you've got to remember, 16 points is really not too far away from getting your about 36, which is probably where you'll need to be about. So they don't need that many more results. So if they'd in those last 5 games got some good results, they'd almost already be safe, which would be kind of ridiculous. So I think it's, as where the season is at the moment, it's kind of about right. Because if you actually look at what their results are, it's 4 wins, 4 draws, 5 losses. Which Wolves fan wouldn't have taken it out at the start of the season?
No, I definitely think it's something you would take if you just got promoted and you start up with 4 wins, 4 draws and 13 games. I don't think you're going to complain too much about that.
No, I completely agree. I think it was pretty much inevitable that they were going to hit a bad patch, especially seeing as what their problem seems to be is the finishing touch. They're pretty good at controlling the game. They've got pretty good defenders. But I like Jimenez as a sort of the workhorse kind of forward. I wonder if he's your sort of 10, 12, 13 goals a season striker. I'm not quite sure about that. Adama Traore hasn't quite come into the team yet. Things like that. Jota's barely been in the team. So there is still a lot to go on there. But I think you're probably right that it doesn't say too much. But actually, it does say a lot about Huddersfield, or at least shows that they've got a chance. Because I, for one, thought Huddersfield were pretty much nailed on to finish in the relegation zone. They're now 15th, which is only 2 points outside of it. But there being 4 points separating 13th from bottom, it shows how tight it is. Do you think Huddersfield do have a chance of staying up, or do you think they're still down there as one of the top, maybe two or three relegation candidates?
I would say they're still down there as one of the top two or three relegation candidates. And the difference is this. You can look at a team like Wolves and you'll say, even if they're hitting a bad patch, you know they're still playing decent football. They're still playing, okay? They're not defending too well and they're not converting their chances. But you can turn that around in one or two games. That's not like something where you're really going to struggle to pick up results. You can turn that around, and once you've got that turnaround, a bit of confidence with your strikers, a bit of more solidity with your defenders, you can start to average out some better results. I look at it in a similar situation as to Burnley, and I know Burnley are in a bad position at the moment, but they're still looking like Burnley. They're still looking like a decent team outfit. Their defending's just not been very solid, and they've not getting the finishing touch in place. It's the same problem as Wolves, just on lower points. All they've got to do is have one or two games to turn that one around, and they're just going to sort of surf somewhere nice, middle table, just above relegation zone, and they'll kind of see the season out like that. Huddersfield, Palace, Southampton, Cardiff, Fulham, I'd say all of those teams, you look at and think, if they get a result, that's an exception. That's not a it's going to turn around now kind of moment. It's a, right, you've got your little win. That's your oasis in the desert. You've now got to go another 5 games before you're getting points or you're getting a draw. That it's that kind of situation. And it's just a contest of who manages to get enough of those oases at this point.
Yeah, I think that's a very good, very good way to look at it, actually, with like the way that Wolves, it's actually more of a bad result for them than it is a good result for Huddersfield in a way. That's the way that story's been looked at. Maybe just because Wolves are at home. If Huddersfield were at home, maybe we wouldn't be saying that and that kind of thing. But they were exceptionally bad in that game, like unusually bad. Like they didn't keep the ball at all. No one could pass, which is like what they're good at. So it was interesting, but they haven't played that bad in the games before. They were really good against us. I think you're probably right to say that it is just a blip in their form. So they probably should be all right.
I think Huddersfield's going to be one of those teams is their season could all just rely on how well Aaron Moy plays in the game. Because you get certain teams where if one player plays well, the whole team seems to click.
Yeah.
And if they don't, the whole team just falls. And I think they're going to be one of those teams who's going to rely on him a lot.
Yeah. And they also, it looks like from that game that they had a chance to come back into it when they were 1-0 down. And there's basically nothing you can do to accommodate for Aaron Moy scoring from outside the box. There's like basically nothing you can do in football to prevent a long shot. Because you don't want your players like throwing themselves out of the box because then there's an easy pass against a team like Wolves. So maybe there's an element of luck in there that they just pinged one from 20 yards or whatever it was. But yeah, so
next Aaron Moy is class. He's one of those players, in a year or two, he's going to be Everton, Tottenham, someone like that. He's just going to be sitting in their midfield and it's going to be like he was never not there. A bit like Gylfi Sigurdsson, spent so many years at Swansea. And the second he starts moving to a bigger team, you don't even question it. You're just like, yeah, that's about right. Okay, fine. That's what Aaron Moy is to me. He's just waiting to get a bigger move. But yeah, credit for him staying at Huddersfield for as long as he has done.
But another big result of the weekend. Sorry, Shane. Oh, Ranieri getting his first win in his debut against Southampton. It's doubly sweet for me because obviously Southampton losing is... that's probably harsh. I actually like Southampton and I went to university there. It's a nice city. It is full of rats, but that's fine. Not the people. I mean, literal rats.
I was going to say, I'm understanding Harry Redknapp, but the rest of it, nah.
Harry Redknapp's in the jungle now, isn't he?
I don't mind Southampton, I just hate Mark Hughes.
Yeah. But yeah, this was doubly sweet as we made a bet last week that I said that Fulham would stay up £5 and you said that they wouldn't. So for them to beat Southampton...
I'm pretty convinced we're joining them.
You're joining them. So you think it's going to be Fulham, Huddersfield, Southampton? Fulham. It's hard, isn't it, man?
I think Huddersfield might be the team who just nicked their way out of it, you know, goal difference kind of situation. I think...
Mamrie's on Cardiff.
If we stick with Mark Hughes, we are going down. It's as simple as that. I don't ever want to be one of those fans who says the manager's got to go, the manager's got to go. It's all the manager's fault. It's not. The players aren't playing. So it's on them as well. But the manager has to get the players playing. He's got to get them playing for him, for the team, for whatever the hell he's going to get them playing for the style, something like that. Right now, we have absolutely nothing. If you ask me to describe that Southampton team, to say what Mark Hughes' style of players, what the Southampton style of players, what the type of Southampton player we've got is, I honestly couldn't tell you other than rubbish. That's the only answer I could give you, because we haven't got anything that discerns us. And even the other teams around us have something. Fulham, yeah, I think they're going down, but they play attacking football. I can tell you that. I can tell you that their players are quick counter-attacking players. I can tell you that about them. I can tell you Burnley, they're a well-drilled team unit and they've got defensive-oriented players. I can tell you that about them. Cardiff, made for set pieces, made to be a team block, all working as one. Southampton, I'm a fan of them and I watched most every week. I couldn't tell you anything about what we are, about how we play, about what we do. Not one single thing. And when you've got that, what was the last team where you could say that about them, where they were, you know, not a top sort of 10 team? What was the last team you could say about where they didn't go down?
Yeah,
because honestly, it's every single one, and we are walking into this. We're not sleepwalking into it. We are fully alive and conscious, saying, "Yeah, let's stick with Mark Hughes." But we're going down. We've got to try a new manager. We've already sacked Les Reed as our director of football. We've got to try a new manager, because even if it doesn't work, we're going down anyway. We've got to do it. Maybe give it to someone like Sam Allardyce until the end of the season. Say, keep us up. We're not keeping you on past this season. We're going to rebuild after that, but we just need to stay up. I'd be happy with that. Bring it. Bring in Big Sam. I don't care.
I just want to ask, what happened to Romeo and Davis? Because I remember watching them up here two seasons ago, and they absolutely played us off the park by themselves, the two of them.
Davis is old. Yeah, Davis got old.
He lost that yard of pace he did have. He was a little bit like a real budget David Silva in terms of the exact way he played.
I used to absolutely love Davis. I used to think Davis was like one of the most underrated players. I used to think he was like top five or six quality easily, but he has aged quite badly.
If you took away David Silva's turn of acceleration, you've got Pirlo in his last year. And it's like, that's great if you're playing defensive midfield where there's no one near you at any point in the game. Yeah, but when you're playing in advanced positions, that's quite difficult. Davis has lost his pace. Romeo got a bad injury. Very much struggled to recover of it. Other players came in who were doing well in midfield and he just couldn't recover his place. And he was class. He genuinely was, but then he couldn't get his place back. And I'll be fair, for the likes of Højbjerg, it's well earned. He's probably been our best player this season. And it's not like, oh, it's the best player in a terrible team. He's playing well enough that if he got a move to the likes of Tottenham, I wouldn't blink twice at it. If they said Dembele is going at the end of the year and they bought in Højbjerg and everyone's like, what is that? They've just bought a relegation player. They'd see very quickly he's class.
He's built for that Tottenham team as well, like a ball carrier. Yeah. Like the way Dembele is, like he would actually be perfect for them. Like when
you want someone to link up with someone like Eriksen.
Yeah, exactly.
A move made in heaven. Yeah. But you look at it and we can't keep the goals out. We've got one or two all right defenders. Vestergaard does look like a good defender and McCarthy is a quality goalkeeper. But then we've got Wesley Hurt, who is genuinely one of the worst defenders I've ever seen. I can't understand why he's even playing ahead of the likes of Yoshida or Stevens. Because he's rubbish. And he's not just regularly rubbish, where you look at him a bit like Martin Kelly, where you go, he's just not very good. He's not awful, he's just not very good. Hurt is actually, he causes us to concede goals. And when you're a defender, that's the utter opposite of what your job is supposed to be.
Shame.
He scores own goals. He's awful.
Could you say it hurts to see him in defence?
I hate you, but yes, it does. Yes, it absolutely does. And that's it. We can't score goals either because we're not playing in any particular way that actually means you're going to create goals. So we're not creating a lot of set-piece opportunities, or we're not playing through the line so we can get our faster players to accelerate into those positions. We're not playing up to a big target man. We're not playing two up front or playing one up front. One of them's playing off of it. And we've got a whole bunch of strikers who just don't like scoring goals anyway, like Shane Long. So we're really struggling to get goals. We're really getting goals from midfield coming forward. That's it at the moment. And it's the likes of Højbjerg banging one in from 20 yards. That's the only thing that's kind of saving us or getting us any kind of points. So at that point, and it's the worst thing is I look at that team and I still think it's maybe not as good a team as we had the likes of 2 years ago, but it's not that far off actually. It's because the combination of it, the way we've combined it, and that is the manager's responsibility, has absolutely disintegrated. We've lost complete sense of what our team identity is, complete sense of what our club culture identity is, and as a result, we're just a shell, and we're just waiting until we crack, and that's us going down then.
Yeah, I'd say they're probably the most disappointing team for me in the last 2 or 3 years, because you see the amount of talent they have. You'd think they should just be sort of comfortably unthreatening, but mid to higher table next year, where where the lower teams are going to lose to them, but the bigger teams are going to beat them, that kind of team. But
we were in a position to genuinely be top four challengers. I think that we had the talent there to do it. We had the managers there to go and do it. We lost our way. We genuinely could have done what Everton's been trying to do for years in terms of poaching one of those top four spots, which Tottenham managed to do. We had the talent for it. And if you go back through the last couple of years, the team we had, and I know we weren't going to keep all of them, but all you've got to think is just a bit of reinvestment here or there, signing players who are as good as them. It was so within our grasp to go and do that. And now to look at it, and I think if we're not relegated this year, we're relegated next year. I genuinely think one of the biggest falls from grace in the last, 5-6 years in Premier League football. Aston Villa's maybe the only comparable one.
I would say don't say that to a Sunderland fan. Hey.
Well, Sunderland, you boys knew you were going down for about 4 years before you went down.
We were just waiting for the year to go down. Yeah. We had three miracles. We were kind of a fourth one. And then Moyes in charge, you just didn't see it coming at all, no matter what.
Right. Well, we will get on to the final game of the weekend, which I thought was probably the most exciting game, which was Tottenham versus Chelsea, with Spurs ending Chelsea's unbeaten run at the start of the season.
I'm glad you're ignoring the Newcastle game.
Oh yeah, I did, of course. Yeah, 2-1 to Newcastle at Burnley. Yeah, of course. Actually, that was quite a big game for the relegation zone. Newcastle moving surprisingly high up the table, but again, it's still really tight down there. Burnley really struggling. I still kind of agree with Shane in the sense that they probably will find a way to make it work. I think Ben Gibson coming back to fitness will help them a lot. He's such a good defender. I really rate him so highly. But a great result for Newcastle and pushes them really high up
the
table.
It's painful to talk about.
we'll move on from there. Going back to Tottenham v Chelsea. Do you want to talk about it?
Not really. Did you see Matt Ritchie's miss?
Yeah, I saw Matt Ritchie's miss. I'll tell you what, that there is a note of that in my news segment, a bit about him talking about him missing and how that impacts players. And there's some analyst looking at it, how there's like a correlation between players missing and then form dipping and things like this, like Sterling last year and Morata forever and all of that kind of stuff. It's quite interesting, but I ended up taking it out because it sounded like I would have had to talk about it for ages. But yeah, it was a bad miss. Bad miss. Yeah.
It was funny to watch, though.
It was funny to watch.
I would say this coming, their turn of form, because I know a Newcastle fan that said basically, once they get the first win, this is where they'll move away. See, that's all
I heard a very similar thing from another Newcastle fan. They all just saw it coming.
It's amazing how often it happens that what you could consider to be what is basically the top 0.005% of the best footballers in the world can miss a chance like that, and we would be annoyed at it and missing it ourselves. It's crazy, isn't it, how they can still do it? But I find it amazing. There were so many that weekend. I can't remember what other game I was watching with my dad where it was a shocker or whatever. But anyway, going back to the Tottenham v Chelsea game, so Tottenham fully deserved, I thought, in the game. What I watched it, and I thought they were completely dominant, totally deserved to win the match, and that's left them in third place, with Chelsea now 7 points off of top, Spurs are 5 points off top, Liverpool 2 points off top, and City on top. So the real question here is can Tottenham be considered to have replaced Chelsea at this point as the London club fighting for the title?
Well, they've shown in the last few seasons, haven't they?
Oh, wow, we just got two massively conflicting questions. Shay said no, blankly, and Andrew said, well, they've shown it. So go on, Andrew, you fire away. Why have they shown it?
Well, if you think of where they finished the last few seasons, because I'm sure they've been there or thereabouts both times, and they've both been the team that challenged Man City, haven't they? Or am I getting that mixed up? Because they did two seasons ago, where I think they threw it away towards the end. I'm trying to remember what they did.
They actually used to start badly. This is by miles the best start Tottenham, I think, have ever had in the Premier League. So Shane, do you want to fire back at that? Why Tottenham?
Yeah,
aren't?
Well, you say, you know, they've been pretty close. I mean, what was it? Last year they finished third and they were 13 points off the title. if I remember correctly.
But so who was second? Big. Liverpool?
Yeah, Liverpool.
So still a top.
No, Man United Liverpool. Last year, sorry. Man United last year. The year before that, they finished second, and that was, I think it was 7 points off Chelsea. It's not a massive amount in it. And I think the year before that was the Leicester year.
It was.
But the problem is, at no point in any of those, people talk about them as like, oh, they're playing really well. They're playing in a really impressive way. They're playing good football. They've got some good players. They weren't ever winning the title, though. Maybe for like 2 weeks against Leicester before they completely bottle-jobbed it. But they were never winning the title because the year Chelsea won it, we knew Chelsea were winning it. Everyone knew Chelsea was winning it. That was their title. It was like, yeah, they're it's a bit like Man United last year where you go, oh, they're finishing second, but they were not competing with Man City. not on any level. Let's not even pretend they were. There was such a gulf between them. And there was an even bigger gulf between Tottenham, quite clearly. So all these years when they've been saying, oh, look, they're really, really good. It's a bit like when Arsenal fans were going, yeah, we're finishing top four of the year. It's like, well done. That is an achievement. Good job. You're not competing for a title just because you're up there. That's like going, oh, this really average club was finishing in 16th for the last couple of years, but everyone knew they weren't going down. Just because they were finishing in 16th doesn't mean they were relegation candidates. Just means they didn't pick up more points. Just because you're finishing in second or third doesn't mean you're competing for a title. They've not been competing for a title, and they're not competing for a title this year. Look at Tottenham.
They're the top London club at the moment, because at the minute, the way they're going, they're more consistent than a lot of the other teams around them. They finish ahead of Arsenal quite a few seasons.
Yeah, but look at Tottenham, and then look at Liverpool, and look at City. You know who's going to be competing for the title at the end of the year. It's not bloody Tottenham, is it? It's not. It's like Arsenal, just in maybe third instead of fourth. It's they're up there. Well done. It's the whole joke about Tottenham. They're putting the pressure on. Congratulations. You're not actually competing for trophies yet. You're just playing very well. Yes, it's like Napoli. Well done. You're playing great football. You're looking really good. You're better than you were before that. You're not winning anything, though. So you're just doing what the likes of West Ham are doing better. You're doing a better version of it. You're achieving nothing, but looking good whilst you're doing it for a while. I genuinely don't think it's that impressive to do that, because you're more counting on other teams to have bad years to start to displace them. And I think at the end of the year, I do think Chelsea are going to finish higher than them. I think when you're talking about consistency, everyone forgets Tottenham lose games that they just absolutely bloody well shouldn't lose. Chelsea only really lose when they should lose. Chelsea only really lose against the bigger teams. There's the odd result, and it's usually like an away result against the likes of Bournemouth or something.
But isn't that where the key comes in? Because for me, the difference between Tottenham and Chelsea at the moment is Tottenham are basically as settled a team as you can get. I mean, they literally didn't sign anybody. That is their biggest problem, as well as their biggest strength.
Are Tottenham going to win the league this year?
No.
Asking you how.
Because Manchester City are going to win. One word answer.
Are they winning the league this year?
No, but neither are Chelsea.
Okay. Andrew, are Tottenham winning the league this year?
They're not, because Man City are going to win. So I agree with Harry. But you look at this, I think the question was, are Tottenham now the new London club rather than are they going to win the league?
Are they the London club to compete for the title?
If you're going to look at the club, yes, out of all three, out of what's there, I think they're going to be the team that's going to be closest.
I think Chelsea would win it. I think you look at the likes of players like Hazard. Kane is a great player, but I don't think he's been that much of a match winner for Spurs.
How many
Hazard? here's the difference. Hazard pulled Chelsea out of the fire a lot of times. Won them the game. A bit like Lingard does for Man United, where you just sort of go, where the hell did that come from? Kane, he is doing it consistently, and you've got to give him credit for consistency. But he's often scoring the second goal. You know, you're 1-0 up. You're winning 2-0.
No, he's not. Sorry, I don't agree with that.
It's a team game. Everyone's got to be chipping for it if they're going to achieve anything, not just one player.
Yeah, yeah.
To be fair, what I absolutely
agree. All right, okay. I'll bet you another £1 on top of £5. Chelsea finish higher than this Tottenham team. But I'm going to go back to my point of, yes, okay, maybe they're the best London club now on paper, or whichever way you want to work it out. They're still going to win as piss little as all the other ones.
Yeah.
And Chelsea have still won the league title more recently than them. Chelsea are more likely to compete in the future, because you know of the two teams, when it comes to who's going to go in and get a better manager when their manager leaves, it's Chelsea. You know who's going to spend more money and buy better players? It's Chelsea. You know who's going to be in more of a disastrous position when their players leave? It's Tottenham. Who's going to be in a more disastrous position when their manager leaves? It's Tottenham. One of those clubs, by virtue of their position, has a better future and is doing better currently, because they've won more titles, they've won more trophies. What have Tottenham done other than finish third or fourth? Congratulations.
See, I agree with absolutely everything you've just said there, but in referring to this season, my whole point was, and maybe I misworded it a little bit, good on me for being a host. But my whole point was is that I think Tottenham are much closer to Chelsea than everyone thought they were a few weeks ago. Because actually, Tottenham are normally slow starters and they don't get the results early in the season. And then they hit really good form and start playing really well somewhere about a third in the way through the year, which is around about now. And that's my point, is that I think having got these extra results where they, I admit, weren't playing as well as they used to and players were still coming back to fitness. They look like they're missing a fully fit Dembele. They look like Harry Kane was a slightly slow starter, though I think he's right back in it now. And I actually think that Chelsea and Tottenham could finish very close on third and fourth, very close to each
other.
I
do agree with that. But one thing I will say about Tottenham is what they've not done this season, which really makes people have a bit short-term memory, is they've not drawn too many games. Because here's the thing, when a team's drawing games, you can slowly see where the form starts to go. But what they've done is they've won games and then they've just lost one. I mean, you literally look at it, they've won 10 games, drawn zero, and lost three. So when you're sandwiching those losses between some wins, it doesn't look quite as bad. But at the end of the season, work out who ends up with more points from doing that. And it's the team that gets a few more draws rather than the team that's losing more but winning more. And it genuinely will be the way that one works out. And it's the way you can see more form. So people look at Chelsea and you go, oh, they've drawn some games, they've lost this one. And they go, oh, that's quite bad. But then you actually work out how it's going to pan out over the season. And the point I'll make is Tottenham have won 10 games. They won as many games as Liverpool, and you think that's damn impressive. They're also only one win and the other two teams around them winning away from being fifth, down where Arsenal are. So it's because of the way they're not drawing games that they're ending up in that sort of position. So it looks quite good at the moment because the wins, they look amazing, and then it's the losses are a bit rare. But it's both at the top, it's those teams that aren't losing. You look at Chelsea, that's the first game they've lost this season. When Chelsea are going to draw, that's where Tottenham will lose. That's going to be the difference between those two teams.
I kind of agree with you there, but it only matters if those draws are with the teams around them as much as it does with the teams below them. It doesn't matter as much if they drop a point against Brighton, I don't think, or Southampton or Huddersfield or whatever. I don't think that matters as much as like what this is. Like, one of the big part about this is beating Chelsea is such a massive swing in the table. As long as they are beating the teams around them, which they typically have sort of been like 50-50 over. They've generally either won them quite comfortably or lost them quite comfortably. So it'll be interesting to see how they develop.
Just gonna put this out there. If you were going to ask me before this podcast, which team do I prefer, Tottenham or Chelsea? I'd have told you Tottenham. So this isn't like I just hate Tottenham or something.
Yeah, I know. All right. So lastly, we're going to be talking about the Champions League. So we had United winning late against the Young Boys, Spurs giving themselves a glimmer of hope against Inter Milan, and Liverpool and City both dropping points, with Liverpool losing to PSG and City drawing to Lyon. So we're in a situation now where Tottenham have to better Inter's result against PSV while playing against Barca at the Nou Camp. City United are both qualified, with City expected to finish top of the league, barring an outrageous goal difference shenanigan. Shenanigan? Is that a word? Or can you say
shenanigans?
Shenanigans. But yeah, it works. And United can go top of their group if they beat Valencia and Juventus lose to Young Boys, which is pretty unlikely.
Can I just say something?
Yeah, I've got one
There was a great moment on the BBC Sports Day where they do the live text updates, when Fellaini came onto the pitch against Young Boys, when it said Marouane Fellaini has come on late against Young Boys. And when you think about that sentence just a few times, you realise that's really not great.
I was waiting for the joke to happen at some point.
It was definitely intentional on behalf of the guy who was doing that.
I will say, Shane, is that the only reason you wanted me to talk about the Champions League? Right, so for the audience who doesn't know, Shane messaged me beforehand saying, make sure you talk about the Champions League. Apparently, that is why he wanted to do it. Yeah.
Please make sure you talk about Young Boys.
Oh, man. I'll leave that in, definitely. Right, so, and the last situation is that Liverpool now need to beat Napoli at Anfield in order to qualify. So my question here, quite spicy, is have the English teams, who have been praised throughout England for being quality teams this season, have they actually stumbled a bit in Europe, with Tottenham looking like they need a miracle to qualify, United and City both qualifying, but neither of them absolutely smashing their group, and United in particular had a very easy group. And with Liverpool looking like they might not even make it, have we stumbled a bit?
Seems like Liverpool's gone backwards a bit since the start. Because I thought they would, I thought they'd win the start quite well. I thought they were going to win the group, but all of a sudden, two losses, and you're looking like they could potentially go out.
Yeah, I think I do agree. Actually, I do think the English teams, for all the credit they've been given, and people have been saying this is gonna be the year an English team wins it. The only team that's really done well is City. And even they lost against Lyon. They've not exactly, you know, swept that group aside. They've had a bit of a tough time of it in some of their games. United, I think they've been massively disappointing. You
scored six, conceded two. They haven't exactly...
I mean, they've not... You look at the other teams who are topping their groups and the way they're doing it. They've all almost scored double the amount of goals United have. Yeah. And arguably, United have had a weaker group than they have done. The only other team that's really strong in that group is Juventus. And what you would have expected it to look like is it would have been both teams on around 13, 14 points. Maybe they take, you know, a win off of each other and then a draw against each other, something like that, where they're, you know, cleaning up the other two teams, Valencia and Young Boys, not in the same league as they are, and then it's them two walking it. Now, of course, they are both going through, but I don't think Man United have been convincing at all. It's been a bit like they are in the league, where you go, they're not in a disastrous position, but Christ, they bloody well should be lower by how they're playing. City, as I've said, that's okay. Liverpool and Tottenham, I genuinely think they're both going out. I think the results they need are actually absurdly tricky when you think about it. Yes, I know it's Liverpool versus Napoli at home. Liverpool should beat Napoli, but Napoli are a good team. It's a bit like linking it to what I was saying before. This is as hard as going up against Tottenham. It's as hard as doing that. And if it was Liverpool v Tottenham playing at Anfield, you'd still say, oh, I reckon it could be a draw.
Yeah.
Well, I reckon Tottenham could do that. Napoli are tough. They have got very, very talented players. Some of the most talented players in the world are in that team. So it's not like it's, okay, that's going to be a Liverpool 2-0 win. Because Liverpool are stumbling. They're not performing well. They're not attacking as well as they have done. And Napoli are a tough team to break down. So yeah. I can see that one easily being a draw. Because you've got to remember as well, as everyone's going to be saying, oh, Liverpool got to play up for it because Liverpool need to go through. If Napoli lose, they go out. Because they're going to expect Paris Saint-Germain to go and beat Red Star Belgrade.
Yeah.
So they know they've got to get a result as well. So it's not like it's one team that needs a result and one team that doesn't, because that's a bit of an advantageous situation.
I also think with Liverpool and Napoli is it's not like they were playing the Napoli of last season, where it's two teams who play chaotic, high-pressing football, and it's basically a 50-50 to who outscores the other. This is the Napoli under Ancelotti, who are much more solid than they used to be.
Yeah.
Like they are a genuinely much more competitive team as a unit than they were last season, as opposed to just passing and shooting the opposition out of the game. So it is way harder than it was last season, I think, to get these kind of results is when they're going to defend. I think they're going to defend and counterattack for most of the game.
And they are good at that.
And they are good at that. They have been good at that.
And Liverpool are actually quite weak against a team that can counter-attack effectively.
Yeah, exactly.
And what I'll say is Tottenham, and I really hate to be kind of just completely ragging on Tottenham.
Yeah, you've been on fire on Tottenham today.
But Tottenham, you look at what they've got to do. Yes, Barcelona are already qualified, so they may field a weaker team. But Barcelona at the Nou Camp, not like they're out of form or something. And those players, those top players, they're going to want to play against an English team. You're not going to see, you know, then the manager's not going to say to Messi, oh, you know, we're already through here. Do you want to take a rest against Tottenham? He's going to say, I'm up against Harry Kane. And they're saying Harry Kane's one of the best strikers in the world. I want to show him how it's done. I want to go and score a hat trick and say, that's how you do it at the Nou Camp. That, those players are so intensely competitive, they're not going to want to sit it out. So it will have to be a manager's direct decision if that does go that way. And it's okay, first of all, we've got to get a win at the Nou Camp, because Inter Milan against PSV, you'd expect Inter Milan to get a result there.
Especially at home.
Real shock if Inter Milan didn't get a result.
Although I will say I don't think that should underrate that PSV team, because they've actually been surprisingly good.
It's a good PSV team.
I think they've been
PSV team that is absolutely out of it. They've got
they're
playing up for pride. And the problem with playing for pride is if you go and get a goal straight away, you're thinking, okay, yeah, let's go and go out on a bit of a high. If you concede fairly early on, within the first 20 minutes, what's the point in really trying this? Let's just not get injured out here, lads. Let's not see ourselves out of the our home title race. Let's not do that. So that one depends how it goes nice and early on. But you'd expect Inter Milan to win, but you wouldn't expect Tottenham to beat Barcelona at home. It's going to take a hell of a performance, especially with the fact Tottenham concede late quite often against a team, Barcelona, who are quite specialists at scoring late.
But the other thing is, though, with the way they played against Real Madrid last season, and obviously they went on to win the Champions League, and with the way that Barcelona has been the last few weeks, didn't they lose their first game this week, I think it was. They lost a game against somebody. I should probably know that before I say it, but I'm going to anyway.
Barcelona are a big game team.
Yeah, they know how to do that.
Big game players. They've got a big game team. And those players are going to look at Tottenham and they're going to say that's a big game. Because whenever you're playing against the English clubs, you've got to remember as well, for the Spanish clubs, it's kind of a point of pride to say to the English clubs, no, we're the best league in the world. Stop your rubbish. Stop your talking. You teams aren't as good as what you say you are.
The other leagues have got the best teams, but we've definitely got the best league because the other teams here are strong against.
We've done that debate a million times. I think we always come up to that sort of point. But it's when people say Barcelona aren't going to take that one seriously, I think it's wishful thinking. It's honestly wishful thinking. I think both Tottenham and Liverpool are going to go out in this one simply because the way those fixtures have balanced out and the way they've obviously got their results means that these last games are just too bloody difficult.
I honestly think that.
If it had been something slightly different, you know, like Tottenham are going to go to Inter Milan for their final game, I think actually, yeah, Tottenham can do that. They're a good enough team to do that. If Liverpool were, you know, sitting at home against PSG for their last game, PSG already through, I'd think, yeah, okay, fancy Liverpool to go for that really quick at the start, get an early goal, say to PSG, go out there and not get injured. I can see how that would work out. It's just the way it's gone. And I think it's terribly unlucky, especially for Spurs, who have shown a good amount of fight in the Champions League after a bit of a poor start. For Liverpool, I think it's just more a case of showing that they're really off the boil in Europe this year. But yeah, it's unlucky. And I do think it's a shame for English football because I think we should have had four teams going through. You look at those groups, we should have had four teams going through. Liverpool and Napoli, yeah, Napoli's a good side, but you'd have expected it to have been one or two points going Liverpool's way. And I just don't see it happening.
I do think that the Tottenham one in particular is like sports soap opera territory, as in like if they somehow manage to get to qualify out of that with the amount of things that need to go right and wrong for other teams, it is pretty much like fantasy television sort of deal.
It's like that England manager where we're relying on Luxembourg to go and win the game for us so we can qualify.
Do you know what, Shane? You'll like this analogy. It's the kind of thing that you save the game before you do it on Football Manager so you can repeat it over and over again just to make sure you get it right. That's what it is.
Never be a save scummer except for bad results.
No. I wasn't saying I do it. I was just saying other people do it. there we go. Right, I think that will just about do for the V2 Football Podcast this week. We are looking at doing a big fat quiz of 2018, so keep an eye out for that in the month of December. If you do have any questions or things you want us to talk about on the podcast, don't hesitate to put them as a comment on our SoundCloud. Tweet them at us with the hashtag V2 Football Podcast or at us at the V2 Sport Network. Thank you very much for listening. I've been your host, Harry Philby, with Shane Lees and Andrew. Thank you very much for joining us. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. You should have heard our first introduction, listeners.
I'm probably going to do an outtakes of all my terrible moments as my debut as a host at the end of
this. That'll be one long podcast.
Oh, come off it, guys. You're meant to be nice. Yeah. Good evening, listeners, and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. Fuck. That's so mad.
Godcast. Hello, Angus. Welcome to the Godcast. Oh, man.
That's literally the first line.
Hello, we have to include that.
This is going to be the best episode of the V2 Football Podcast that anyone's ever heard. I am going to stop talking for a second because my page has frozen. Hello?
Technical difficulties. Is it working yet?
Yeah, hello. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I can hear you.
I can hear you as well.
Right. My computer's messed up and frozen a little bit.
Can you hear us? Okay, no, he can't hear us. Hang on.
Mm-hmm. I heard him come through. Like, I thought he could hear us.
We can hear you.
Well, I can't hear you, Shane.
Well, I don't know what to do about that.
That's a problem. We'll obviously edit all this crap out. Why does this happen on my fucking debut?
Can you still not hear us?
Just call him every name under the sun until he understands us.
Harry, you're a twat.
Knobhead.
You fuck.
It's the greatest debut I've ever known.
Oh, hello. Hello, can you hear me again? No, I can hear you. Yeah, I closed my Chrome and now it's working again.
We could consistently hear you.
Fucking as if everything's against me today. Like the internet fucking blows up. I say the wrong words. Sol Campbell gets a job. All right, well, that's another one for the outtakes. All right, so I think that will just about do for the V2 pod. Words. I think that was. I messed up the intro and the outro, and I got all the middle right, except for my internet cutting out. But there we go. All right. Right, I think that will just about do for the V2 pod. Fucking my mouth. Fuck's sake. See, once I'm there, I'm there. That's the thing. Once I've got it, it's good.
I mean, that's an axiomatic statement, but yes, Harry.
What's an axiom? I'm going to Google that word.
It means self-defining.
You're self-defining.
It's true by definition.
You're true by definition.
Thank you.